Hour number two of the DDC, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick here with you. We say hello to Dan Wolkin, the USA Today, after it was a wild day in college sports with supposedly USC and UCLA joining the Big Ten. And Dan, we've seen over the last few months teams or schools wanting to move around, change conferences. Obviously here in SEC country, you have Oklahoma and Texas that are going to join the SEC, but to me, that this move, I don't know if it spells the end of the Pac-12 or the Big 12 for that matter, but it feels like things are moving more and more towards a Power 4 and not so much a Power 5.
Really more like a Power 2.
Or a Power 2.
That's just the reality of it. It's the Big 10 and the SEC head-to-head dominating the landscape, and everyone else is going to be pretty irrelevant. I mean, that's just the way it is. I don't know how exactly it's going to take shape or when it's going to completely get there, but those two have already been moving away from the rest of the pack financially for quite some time. And, you know, when you have a situation where the Big Ten and the SEC schools are going to be getting, you know, $75, $80, $100 million a year each, and you know, the ACC and the Big 12 are, you know, like in the 30s or whatever, then that's a pretty, you know, then that's a pretty big break. That's not playing on the same playing field. So I don't know how big the Big 10 is going to get. I don't know what the SEC is going to do. Everybody's kind of wondering, but really all of college sports right now is looking to see if they can get on one of those two lifeboats. Because if you can't, then you're going to have some problems.
So in your mind, when you talk about, you know, whatever analogy you want to use, musical chairs or jumping on the boat, when you look at a small, these, not small school, but the schools that don't have the type of power that an Alabama or a Georgia, I'll use Vanderbilt as a prime example. They're a founding member of the SEC. They're based in Nashville, Tennessee, but we know Vanderbilt's not competing to win the SEC in football or a national championship in football. They're just not. They are what they are. So where do teams like that, schools like that, fall into all of this?
Well, I don't think Vanderbilt's like going to get thrown out of the SEC or anything anytime soon, and I can't imagine that Vanderbilt would want to go anywhere unless it was to the Big Ten. You know, I certainly have made an argument in the past that Vanderbilt in some ways would be better suited to be in the Big Ten with more like-minded, academically oriented competitors. But they're not. They're in the SEC. They're a founding member. I don't think they're going anywhere. But, you know, again, like the SEC, I don't know, is it going to be an 18, 16, 18, 20, 24? Like whatever it is, you know, then that's, you're going to have to fit in there somewhere. You're going to, you know, compete against who you compete against. But like, for me, when these leagues get to that point in size, they're not really college conferences the same way that we are used to knowing them our whole lives. Like, they're just, you know, it's like the, you know, the AFC and the NFC. Like, it doesn't really mean anything. It's just kind of where you play. As long as you're in the NFL, you're in the NFL. And that's kind of where we're headed to, because there's going to be, you know, massive conferences, not a whole lot of differentiation between, you know, these two. They're just going to kind of be big money-making behemoths, and that's where you want to be.
So do you see, we're talking to Dan Wolkin, USA Today, do you see, you know, schools like Miami, Florida State, Clemson, maybe Notre Dame, you know, deciding that they're going to have to move into one of these because they want to stay relevant as programs that, you know what they've done. They've won championships in the past. So could you see, you know, them being the next group that's going to try and jump around?
Look, ever since the Texas and Oklahoma thing happened a year ago, those big football brands in the ACC very clearly started to evaluate what their options were. Clemson, Florida State, Miami, you know, those are the three, but also, North Carolina. I mean, North Carolina might be, like, if you could have a draft of all the available schools, you know, North Carolina might be the number one draft pick for both the SEC and the Big Ten at this point, you know? So, again, all this stuff is sort of up in the air. The issue with the ACC is that they've got this media rights contract and a grant of rights that goes out until, you know, somewhere in the mid-2030s. So is there a way to get around that? Can you, like, pay your way out of it? Like, those kinds of things, I'm sure, are being talked about at those schools as we speak. And another thing that could happen, theoretically, is the ACC makes a play to get some of those West Coast schools that are now, you know, kind of up in the air because of the Pac-12 situation. I think the main reason the ACC would be interested in that is because it would allow them to potentially reopen their television contract. Like, let's just say the ACC, which, you know, like I just mentioned, they're not happy at all with the television contract. It's a bad contract, and it locks, you know, schools like Clemson and Florida State into insufficient financial situation to compete over the long haul. Well, if you add, you know, Stanford and Cal and Oregon and Washington and whoever else to the ACC, well, then, you know, then maybe you can come back to the negotiating table with ESPN and get more money. You know, maybe that saves the ACC. But there's a million scenarios people are throwing around right now. That's just one of them. But, like, that, those are the kinds of things that I think these leagues have to do right now to survive, because this is a very fluid environment.
We're talking to Dan Walken about this college football shakeup, the college sports shakeup. Dan, I want to say you might have still been at Vanderbilt when the state of Tennessee split the public and private championships, and everybody was really up in arms here. It was so new. And now it's just sort of what a ton of states do around the country. Are we starting to see the split now in Division I? So many people have speculated that over time, that essentially you're going to have two Division I championships, a top tier and then a second tier.
Here's the thing, is there's only so many schools that really are needle movers in college football. And, you know, the reality is, if you could blow it up and start over, you know, I'm not sure that your, you know, your Floridas, Georgias, and Alabamas would particularly be all that interested in being in the same league as Kentucky and Mississippi State and South Carolina. You know, so I don't know how, you know, that plays out in 10, 20, 30 years, but I do remember that when that whole Premier or Super League, European Super League soccer thing with all, you know, with all the best teams, you know, the best from England and Spain and Italy, you know, kind of all going into one league. Like, that's the kind of thing college football is very slowly evolving into. So this next phase of it is two, you know, big mega power conferences, the Big Ten and the SEC, and they're going to, you know, have this television deal that's going to set them up for the next, you know, 10 to 15 years. And then what happens after that? You know, then do you get Ohio State, Michigan, you know, and Penn State saying to, you know, Florida and Georgia and Alabama, saying, hey, you know what? Why do we need Purdue and Indiana and Mississippi State? Why don't, you know, we should be together, because that's how we're going to make the most money. So, like, it sucks, especially for the fans. It's awful for college football fans and the regional character of college sports and the traditions and all that. But, like, it's pretty obvious that's kind of how it's evolving.
There's so many questions here. We could go on for hours about it. And, you know, if I think of Belmont basketball, right? What as they look at the next 10 years, what does it mean for them? But let's look at the next thing that a lot of people are hitting on, Dan, is Greg Sankey has had his eye on, okay, someday it's going to go to a 12-team college football playoff. How many teams from my league can I get in there? And what about automatic qualifiers? So a lot of people are asking this question, is in the Pac-10, now it's down to 10, can they justify an automatic qualifier in a college football playoff without USC and UCLA? And what about the ACC and the Big 12 for that matter?
Yeah, see, I think all that stuff is over at this point. I mean, the
really?
College football playoff, the college football playoff expansion negotiation that stalled out basically, earlier this year, is a huge part of all this. Because now, first of all, there's, even more uncertainty injected into the process about what the conferences are going to look like. So that's a big issue. But second of all, once the college football playoff contract expires right now, 20, I can't remember if it's 2025 or 24, whatever year it is, it's somewhere around there, there's nothing on paper that's after that. I mean, the contract just ends. So the conference commissioners have to, if they want to have a college football playoff past 2024, 25, or whatever it is, they have to renegotiate it from scratch and figure out what the playoff's going to be. It's always been a cooperative effort between the 10 conference commissioners and Notre Dame. But now, now that we're in this situation, like, what incentive does the SEC or the Big Ten really have to work with these other leagues? I mean, I think it's more likely, and, again, this is just me speculating, but I think it's more likely that you're going to get to the other side of this and, like, maybe the SEC has their own playoff and the Big 12 or the Big 10 has their own playoff, and maybe the two winners meet in the national championship game. I don't really see any reason why the SEC and the Big 10 would agree to give access to clearly inferior leagues and to share money with them when the reality is they're not going to be winning the national championships.
Well, it's certainly going to be something that we're going to be talking about for a while and watching as it all unfolds. Dan, appreciate the time as always. Have a happy 4th.
Wish I had some more answers for you, but it's crazy.
I know. It'll keep
changing. It's fun for talk shows, that's for sure. Yeah.
See you, Dan. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.
Dan Wolkin, USA Today, joining us. And I don't think anybody has the answers. And
we'll... Hey, but the playoff is interesting. That thing he just hit on there. What if the Big Ten and SEC just said, we're not playing?
Yeah.
It's going to be us two, and you guys figure out what you guys want to do.
I mean, we're going to have multiple champions. I just feel like that's where it's going, especially in college football. But we'll continue that conversation. You can weigh in 615-737-1025 on our phone or text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. As it's the DDC, and Willie, I believe you have a word about loans.
I do, and I can do that pronto, as in loan pronto. Hi. With your home value up again, you're just sitting on a big pile of money right now, and there's a lot going on. So don't just let it sit there. You can use it, and you might have different uses for it. Maybe you have some high-interest credit cards or car loans, other things that are piling up on you. Loan pronto can get you cash fast to address those things. You can do a whole loan refinance or take advantage of their all-new equity line of credit program. And either option will let you unlock that equity and get the check. And so you get the cash to pay off the credit cards or pay off that car loan or do some other creative things. Do that home improvement project you've been waiting on or get a down payment for a new home. Anything is possible here with Loan Pronto. It makes unlocking your equity easy. Even with the home equity line, you can access up to 97% of your home's value. So don't let all of that home equity pile up. If you need it, turn your house into an ATM machine and get the cash you need. Here's what you do. Call Loan Pronto right now. 615-499-5780. That's 615-499-5780 or go to loanpronto.com. Equal housing lender, NMLS 166-1781, subject to lender approval.
Back here on the DDC, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Nick Kieser here with you as we talk some college sports and what is happening, with college sports right now. Somebody on our text line, Willie, which you can weigh in on, 615-737-1025, David in Murfreesboro, where does all of this leave schools like Tulane and Memphis? You know, I made the joke yesterday Memphis will join the Pac-12, but I mean it really is going to come to that at some point where, you know, can a conference like the American Athletic Conference actually survive all this? I don't see it.
Well, they'll survive. The schools aren't going to go away. The teams aren't going to go away. The question is just where do they fit? And I think if you work your way from the top down, the first question is, are we moving? I think most people believe the answer is yes. And Dan Wolkin definitely thinks so based on our discussion with him a minute ago, that the Big Ten and the SEC are separating themselves from everybody else. So how many more schools are they going to grab? And are they going to basically make their own league and make their own rules? Maybe they're not even in the NCAA. You know, they could set up their own situation. Jack Swarbrick from Notre Dame has been saying this for months, especially with the craziness of the NIL and the inability for the NCAA to put up any kind of rules and regulations on what NIL means. It's not going away. So basically, there's nothing standing in the way of saying you could do almost whatever you want. So you've got that. So my question then is, all right, you're not in that club. So those are great examples. Memphis, UCF, Boise State, you know, some really good college athletic programs, especially if you're just talking football. How do you make a good, viable league with the best of the rest? And there are going to be some teams that are right now have been in the Power Fives for a long time. Let's just take whoever's left over from the ACC. You know, Clemson, you just heard Dan Wolkin say that there's a potential scenario where just the Big Ten and the SEC have their own playoff, right? We'll have a Big Ten playoff, we'll have an SEC playoff, and then it's the Super Bowl, Big Ten versus SEC. You know, what does Clemson think of that? Clemson's probably sitting there going, well, I got to get into that tournament. That we can win that tournament. We're not taking a backseat to those programs. How do we get in on that? So that's where this is going to shake out. Is does the SEC pick up a Clemson? A lot of people think that will happen. Maybe the Big Ten picks up a few more teams. That could happen. But somewhere in here, that line is going to be divided.
Sure.
And then everybody else is going to decide, all right, how do we play for a championship? I still think that could be a really good, viable thing that people would watch. It would be different. It maybe would not be the most sought-after place to recruit, but I think you'd have a ton of players that would want to go play there. I think you'd still have an interest from TV. It would not have the money and revenue streams that the top tier would have. And so what's the financial model? I think this is what everybody's asking. Middle Tennessee is going to be in this equation somewhere, right?
No doubt. Of course they are.
Western Kentucky is going to be in this equation somewhere.
I think I look at college football specifically, and you know, you can throw basketball into this too.
But football is the financial driver that sets everything else up. So that's the question.
Yeah, and so I've often looked at college football, and we all know that it's gotten huge. And you know, in some ways, like this is a prime example of something getting too big. But I never felt like it was ever that they had allowed it to get too big where they could break it. Now I'm starting to think that eventually they might. It might just get to this point where, not that it's going to go away. I'm not saying that. There's just way too much money in the TV contracts and people are still going to watch, but it's clearly getting out of control. And I just wonder and you have brought this up for years, of what the long-term ramifications are going to be of getting to this point where it is pretty much a pro league now. And that's what it is. There's no amateurism.
And it's already today we're seeing the line of schools that can entice, at least now. Now, you know, whether you can sustain this model year in, year out for decades of being able to fire money at somebody. We use the example of Wyoming. Right, Chase, that is a good, solid program. Where I'm sitting right now, I'm just a couple miles from the UAB campus. Pretty darn good program. That has a brand new facility and momentum, even though their coach just stepped down. But he's left a pretty good foundation to build off of. But that's a prime program, and Wyoming as well, that will become basically a feeder for an upper tier program with a lot of money, Ohio State. In theory, Ohio State could take the best player off of Wyoming or UAB's roster every year. And if not Ohio State, somebody else that has a lot of money to basically say, we can buy you and make you an offer that you're going to have a tough time turning down unless you absolutely love your school and don't care whether you make money or not. You see what I'm saying? That's sure. Where we are even today, even before we see the ramifications of what these movements of schools and the superpowers of the Big Ten and SEC, that hadn't even happened yet. That's a couple of years away. So what I worry about is, are we going to lose programs altogether? I mean, are we going to lose UAB? And we almost lost UAB a few years ago. But some of these other programs, are they even going to say, look, we can't do football anymore in this system? That's the worst case scenario, because that's less opportunities for kids to go play college football somewhere and get a scholarship and do all that.
Yeah, and you know,
nobody thinks about that. Nobody's looking out for what's best for everybody.
Right, and they're not. And that does worry me. I mean, like 20 years from now, do smaller schools, you know, and putting that term in the group of five, basically, do they still have programs? Or because
I think you're going to see some casualties.
Yeah, but I mean, like, think about it. And I'm not trying to say a school specifically, but you know, you bring up the MTSUs and Memphis and Austin Peay and Tennessee Tech and all these schools around here. Like, they have to have a model where they're going to be able to sustain from a financial standpoint. And if you have these super conferences that pull away and just take everything, I mean, the unfortunate part of it is, from a television standpoint, What would you rather watch? Alabama Clemson or Tennessee Tech Austin Peay? And that's the problem.
Not a good example, though. That's not a good example. I think the question is, you know, because let's say you're sitting there and whoever the texture is seems like a fan of Memphis, right? A Memphis fan is going to watch Memphis. They don't, you know, I'm sure they'd watch Alabama, Clemson, or wherever the big national game is that week, if they can't, but they want to watch Memphis play,
right?
And they want to see Memphis play for a conference championship. A UCF fan, a Nebraska fan, you know, whoever gets left. Nebraska is not a good example because they're in the Big Ten. But I'm saying, let's just say Oklahoma State or Kansas State. They care about their school. They don't care about, you know, the big national game of the week. That's not the first priority. So those fans want to continue to have a something to cheer about, something that they want to feel like they can build a program that you can win at, and it means something. And so that to me is a huge, huge question. What do those fans do?
Yeah.
Are they just going to say, you know, hey, I'm out. You know, I'm going to stop giving. I'm going to start becoming a season ticket holder because we're not playing for the same thing we used to play for. That's what I would worry about for the whole. But Greg Sankey can't worry about that. He's worried about the SEC. He's competing, but at what cost? That's been my concern all along. And it was about a year ago you and I sat here and debated when Oklahoma and Texas,
yeah,
that news came down. I want to say almost about exactly a year ago, right?
Yeah.
And we had it out on the air about it. I didn't like it at all. I don't like this move either, but it's pretty easy to see where it's going now. This is only going to spark even more movement within the leagues.
Well, and we got another text that I'll read coming up next, because it's interesting, and we've hit on it a little bit, but it's certainly going to be fascinating to see all the moving pieces with this moving forward. 615-737-1025 is our number as you listen to the DDC, 1025-1063, The Game. Back here on the DDC as the Predators come back out to the ice for the second period. Chase McCabe, Willie Donick, Nick Heiser on the ones and twos behind the glass. We're taking your calls and texts on college sports and where it's going. We've got one texter that said, and put your name, does this end up being like the Premier League in England, where, and Dan kind of referenced that with the Super League, where, yep, there's tiers, the Premier League, the Championship League, all that. There's promotions and relegations. Now, that'd be interesting. I don't know if it gets that
far.
But what
is the financial incentive for the Big Ten of the SEC? Because wouldn't they sort of control that, a promotion or relegation? So I don't know about that. That's a really interesting theory that I hadn't thought about until Dan brought it up. I know that's gotten thrown out there, but that would be something. But I think a lot of people are just also, your focus could be very centric on your team, like a Memphis fan or I'm sure a Clemson fan right there, right now has got to be sitting there going, okay, what does this mean for us? We're a national championship kind of program when things are right. But what do we do if we're not in one of these two leagues in 5 years?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure the first answer is like, how do we get into that league? But at some point, it's going to cut off, and the rest of the teams have to decide what to do.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, if you're just playing, even though geography is out the window at this point, I think we all know that. But
yeah, which is fine for football, but at the same time, it certainly doesn't appear that anybody's looking out for the other 15 sports.
Yeah.
That every one of these programs has.
Well, wouldn't it make sense for a Clemson and Florida State, you know, if they get out of the ACC, to join the SEC? Because you have the natural, you know, you have some of the natural rivalries that are already there with,
of course,
Clemson and South Carolina, Florida State, you know, Miami, you could put in that mix too. But I mean, I feel like that's
North Carolina and Duke would be possible additions. They could take any of them, but the question is, how many can you take?
Right.
Where does it stop? What's the right number? Some people have speculated that the SEC could have 24 at some point, and the Big Ten could have a similar number. So, is that good? I don't know. I mean, it would cease to become what we have known it as. Right now, we're still kind of clinging to the old traditions when the leagues used to be more 8 to 10 teams.
Right.
And it made sense with scheduling. Now the scheduling makes no sense at all, as we talked about a lot yesterday, with, hey, let me try to preserve the rivalries and also keep a fair schedule. You can't do both, really. The bigger your league becomes, it becomes less fair in every sport. It doesn't make sense. It's not in sync. So the league gets thrown off because of it. But what the heck do you do with a 24-team league? That's a whole nother animal.
Well, I mean, that's where I think it just simply becomes, you know, the college football league and you know, the new
CFL. Yeah, it's more
new,
of a college football. Yeah, there's leagues within the league.
Yeah, and you know, I think, and Dan said this too, that, you know, the SEC is like the AFC and the Big Ten's like the NFC, and that's pretty much what it is. But how does that affect basketball? How does that affect baseball? How does that affect bowling, you know, other sports? Because I think we lose sight of that sometimes, of how, you know, those smaller, the other sports, the, you know, the ones that don't pull the revenue like football does, there's obviously a domino effect for them too.
In a big way. And I think they just sort of figure that part out after the fact. You know, it all starts with football and the money, and then you do the best you can with everything else, which stinks if you're a baseball coach, if you're a basketball coach. I think a major question in 5 to 10 years is, what will the NCAA basketball tournament look like? That's still something we care deeply about in our society, but you can't really do it if you have a separated tier and the Big Ten and SEC are playing for their own championships, which is one scenario that's possible.
So Nate on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, could schools like MTSU and Western Kentucky keep the traditional college sports model, since they don't have the same money and resources? And so basically, I guess what he's saying is you'd have the schools like that that they keep the NCAA going, just stay as is. Obviously, they would have a champion, and then everybody else goes and breaks off and does their own thing. I mean, that's what we're saying. I think that's kind of what it feels like, where this is going.
Dan had a proposal, and this is just for football, that the SEC could take their top four, maybe even six, and have a playoff. The Big Ten could do the same. And then the winner plays the winner in a championship game. And that's separated from anybody else. That, because they control the money on that, and the NCAA really doesn't have a say, they could do that and nothing could stop them. Now, that would completely narrow down the broad audience for everybody else. All the remaining teams in the Pac-12, all the remaining teams in the Big 12, all the remaining teams in the ACC. None of those fans, I think, would care.
Right.
So what does that do long term? And then what do the rest of the people do? They have their own championship, I guess. What's left over of the quote-unquote alliance that took a lot of ribbing yesterday in the wake of the USC-UCLA thing. That alliance didn't seem to mean much. How many eyeballs would watch that? It's a secondary tier championship. So what's the audience for that? I still think you have it better. There's strength in having the entire nation watch for one champion, but I'm not sure that's going to happen at this point. And it may just evolve into something completely different over the next 20 years. The immediate question too, as Dan pointed out, is the college football playoff has to be sort of renegotiated. What, after 2024, after 2025, one of those two. So you're starting from scratch. So if you have a 12-team playoff, we know the Big Ten and the SEC are going to have multiple teams in there in this new thing, especially with the teams they're adding. But can you have an automatic bid out of the Pac-10, if it is then called the Pac-10, or the Big 12? Do they still get a bid? Do they still get an automatic qualifier? That was the attraction to some of those leagues, that it was a compromise. The SEC could get multiple teams in, but yet you would have guaranteed participation from the other leagues, not to mention the group of five, right? There was room for maybe the best of the group of five, a Boise State or whoever else is left over. They could have a seat at the table there. That was something that was meaningful. But now, does that all go out the window? Does a Pac-10 champion of the remaining schools, do they deserve a spot in a college football playoff? Well, for the balance of everything, I'd like to see that, but they're going to become inferior, you would think.
Unfortunately, Willie, and I think you know this, it depends on who it is. If it's Oregon, the answer is yes. If it's Arizona State, I don't know if the answer stays the same. I mean,
well,
if it's
Washington State, you're winning a weaker league is what it comes down to. In theory, you could have a league champion from a league that really doesn't have a lot of juice compared to the Big Ten and the SEC.
Yeah, but it also has to do with just the pull that, you know, certain schools have. Oregon has more pull than Washington State. That's just
right, and that's why the question would be: is it automatic in a new playoff to where you have protection? If it's Washington State, it doesn't matter whether you're Washington State or Oregon. How much "quote unquote" pull? If you win the league, you're in the tournament.
Right, and we'll see if it goes that way.
Yeah.
Well, there's a little bit of a twist in the NHL coaching search, coaching openings, I should say. We'll tell you about that coming up next. And also, Willie, I know you want to hear my concert review, so we'll get into that as well as you listen to the DDC, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. Are we in Major League? I like this. Back here on the DDC, Chase McKay, Willie Donick, hanging out with you as Wild Thing is getting warmed up in the bullpen, so ready to go. Well, Darren Drager of TSN, Willie, has put out that the Winnipeg Jets and veteran coach Rick Bonus are working on finalizing an agreement for him to be their next head coach. We had talked earlier that we thought it was going to be Rick Tocchet, but I guess not. I guess they're going with Rick Bonus.
I saw Kevin Weeks, I think, put out yesterday at some time that it was Tocchet's to take or not, that he had basically been offered the job. And so it looks like somewhere behind the scenes, Tocchet decided not to do it. Of course, he's got that gig. You know, he's got the bird in hand. He can stay with TNT as long as he wants. It just depends on how much of an itch he has to get back behind the bench. I think that the interesting thing with Winnipeg is most people believe that they're going to shake it up. They're a very big team to watch in the offseason. They've got a couple of things going on. They've got Pierre-Luc Dubois, an excellent young player who they acquired for Patrick Laine, that basically told them, you got me until I'm a free agent, and then I'm going to be testing the market. I'm probably not going to stay. So I just want you to know, you got me for 2 years. You have Mark Scheifele, who's got 2 or 3 years left, and you've got Blake Wheeler, who I think has 2 years left. He's getting up there in age, but he makes over $8 million a year. But the question is it time to blow up that core that we got so used to seeing year in and year out when they beat the Predators in that second round, seventh game, which is still a major, major turning point in the Predators, looking back on that window. You know, imagine if they could have won that game, won that series. What could have been the Predators, President's Trophy winning team? But that Jets team looks like it's on the verge of breaking up. They've kept that core together even to now.
Right.
Some people think that maybe they tried to hang on with that too much, and they have not had a lot of success since then. They benefited from the bubble, right, when the tournament was – and they benefited from being in the All-Canada division. That certainly helped them be more relevant. But the bottom line is they haven't been nearly as good as they were back in 2018. They haven't been the same team. They still have Connor Hellebuck. Yeah. So does a coach going in there feel like you can win? Or are you getting there right as they're about to become a different team? I think that's probably what Tocchet had to look at. Rick Bonus, I thought, was going to go to Ottawa. It looked like he was to become an assistant GM for the Senators as late as yesterday. Now it looks like he's going to be the coach for Winnipeg. So really interesting twist.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, if you're going to go through a rebuild though, I mean, I think Rick Bonus is a good one. You know, we mentioned Jim Montgomery earlier. He is who took over for Jim Montgomery and was able to kind of keep things on the rails when all that happened, and did a fine job with it, obviously. So we'll see. We'll just have to see what happens in the Central Division. Dubois is an interesting one because I respect the fact that he's like, hey, I'm probably not going to stay here, because he did that hoping that, you know, he might get moved. But two, it's at least Winnipeg has time to prepare. You know, is that somebody that David Poile and the Predators could try and target, or is the price just going to be too high?
And the question is, what is the price for, say, 2 years? You know, because the Jets could wait. They could wait it out. But this is what happened with the Blue Jackets and Artemi Panarin. Similar deal. They had him for 2 years, and they got 2 great years out of him. But he told them, I'm not staying, and he didn't. And he signed a big deal with the Rangers. Is it worth it to keep him and just say, all right, Pierre, we understand, but we need you to give us 2 great years. We want you to play your tail off for 2 years, and then you're free to go. Or if a guy really didn't want to be there, are you better off just trading him right now? I'll tell you what's something to look at. You got Alex DeBrincat in Chicago, who's being chopped around right now, 40-goal scorer, similar age as Dubois. You have Dubois, and you have the whole Jets situation. You have Dallas, Jason Robertson, is a restricted free agent. He looks like he would be a huge priority, that even if you tried to go for an offer sheet for him, I can't imagine they would not sign him or match the offer sheet. But these teams in the Central, if you're the Predators and you're wheeling and dealing with those You know, would a deal within the division, how appetizing would that be for the Blackhawks or the Jets to make a deal with Nashville? I think if you have your preference, you'd probably want to deal a player like that away from your division.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. And that's the thing. I mean, those are like, oh, DeBrincat? I would love to have Alex DeBrincat.
Yeah, DeBrincat or Dubois are really, really attractive players. The type of player that could really tip the scales for Nashville. But could you even make a deal with one of those teams? These are the rival teams.
Yeah, but I mean, they have. You know, David Poyle's traded with the Blackhawks. You know, Steve Sullivan came from the Blackhawks.
Yep.
So,
and that was a long time ago.
It was.
You're right. They did.
A lot's happened since then. There's a little more bad blood now.
I'm trying to think of a recent trade in the division.
Predators have made, or just in general?
Any team in the division, but definitely the Predators. Off the top of my head, can you think of?
Yeah, Granlund and Fiala.
Oh, boy, you're right. But there's been a lot of deals between the Wild and the Preds. That's a good one.
Yeah, but, you know, because Chuck Fletcher was there for so long, and obviously David Poyle has a relationship with him, Paul Fenton. So, you know, that makes sense. I'm trying to think if there's any more recent than that. Have they made a deal with Winnipeg?
I do not recall a big deal with Winnipeg.
Yeah.
Wasn't Tony Boteto traded to the Jets? Or was he a free agent?
Was that a trade, or was he a free agent? That's a good question. But I think a modest deal like that is different than, let's make a deal for one of your best players. The Fiala-Granlund trade is a great – that's a rare thing. But, yeah, I didn't even think about that, but that was within the division. It was when – that's a great one.
People are saying Ryan Hartman. Oh, yeah, Ryan Hartman with Chicago.
Ryan Hartman with Chicago, sure.
Yep.
Yeah.
First-round pick.
Significant. Significant, yep.
Yep. So that's
– So it can happen. It can happen.
It can for sure. Real quick, so – last night, go to Nissan Stadium. Excited to see Joan Jett, Poison, Def Leppard, and Motley Crue. And I saw three of the four because we found out literally after Joan Jett was done, members of Poison came on the stage and announced that Bret Michaels had had a reaction to some medicine and been taken to the hospital. And so Poison was unable to play. And Bret Michaels, you know, tweeted that he's okay and appreciates everybody's well wishes. But that kind of stunk because I was really looking forward to seeing Poison again. But it was a good show. Joan Jett was good. Still has it. Def Leppard is one of the best bands I've ever seen live. I've seen them a few times. And I was very, very surprised and happy because I thought Motley Crue was pretty good. The last time I had seen them, Vince Neil, his vocals were gone. He was out of shape. He's still, you know, he's not the same of what he was, but he was much better than the last time I saw him, and they put on a really good show. Mick Mars, I think, is 90, but, you know.
So they all look good. They all brought it strong. How was the crowd?
Crowd was pretty good. I thought
it was full?
I don't know if it was full. I mean, it wasn't full, but it was still a pretty decent crowd, and they were into it. The people watching was fantastic.
But so what's decent? I mean, I didn't see any clips of it. Was it three quarters full, two thirds full? Did they block off any of the seats?
I mean, because where the stage was, like, you basically had the – I was sitting in the end zone, I guess the north end zone is what you would have called it, but the other one was blocked off because that's where the stage was. But you had the floor seats that were full. The lower bowl that wasn't blocked off was full. So it was
good. In theory, you could have walked up and bought a seat in the upper deck to watch it.
Yeah, probably. But I know all the parking lots were full because when I was headed to the stadium, they had the signs that said Nissan lots full. So I parked on the Broadway side and just walked over.
What was the best song of the night?
Probably overall best song of the night was Shout at the Devil.
Shout out the devil. What was the leadoff song for Def Leppard? What did they bring it with?
They opened with a new song, which I didn't like that.
Wow, so, they didn't come with the.
No, they played
Standby.
They played some new stuff, and I was not a big fan of that. But you know, whatever. But
not the first song. Come on, you gotta get the crowd going.
Hysteria was really good live. They brought it on Hysteria.
There an encore?
Kinda, yeah. I mean, they closed the main set with Photograph and then stayed out and played. Or no, they closed the main set with Pour Some Sugar on Me and then Photograph was what they did.
Great.
So it was good. I recommend it. I hope Brett Michaels is okay, but it was definitely very, very good. Andrew texting in asking if I'm going to SummerSlam. Yes, I am. So I will be there too. It's time to put somebody on the list. 615-737-1025. You just made the list. Coming up next on the DDC 1025-1063, the game.